You're listening to Siren 107.3. Good morning. Time now on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition for culinary class and gastronomic gorgeousness with the broadcasting legend, who is William Sitwell.
After a show which has already taken us to Downton Tabby and indeed What Kitty Decides, what better way to actually keep the energy going and high than to welcome William Sitwell. Welcome. Good morning. How are you?
It's a nice cute little giggle she does at the end of that item.
It's actually adorable, isn't it?
Or is it you doing it? Have you got the giggler in the studio?
No, no.
No, we
it's Alex that does that. We do giggle now and again.
And do cat impersonations.
Yes, and cat impersonations.
That's for the podcast.
That's only behind the scenes.
Thank you, Emma Tinson and Jessica Ward, and indeed Elizabeth Obeng, who's making her debut today because Jared is poorly. Anyway, Hotel Indigo, on a mission to discover and uncover the nation's favourite artisan. William, share with us. Nation's favourite. Are we talking pâté here? Are we talking, you know, the fact that as you're joining the wonderful Jimmy Doherty, Kirsten Rogers and Simon Burdess as the official editor of Waitrose Kitchen and MasterChef regular as a judge in this particular aspect? Just talk us through this fantastic thing, Hotel Indigo's competition.
Well, what we're doing is Hotel Indigo, who've got branches of their snazzy brand across Britain. What they do, rather unlike a lot of hotels, is they actually support local producers, local artisans. They make a particular point of recruiting people to their kitchens and recruiting local suppliers, so they don't have a sort of national menu that has to be sort of a homogenized offering to their regulars or to guests visiting them for just a one-off. So what they do is they delve into the local food culture of the region that they're in. And in order to sort of highlight this, they've got this campaign and hashtag neighborhood. And the idea is that they've gathered people like me and good old Jimmy Doherty and the Miss Marmite woman. And
Miss Marmite woman?
Whatever her name is, no, she's great.
Miss Marmite lover?
And basically, we put out the message that if you're an artisanal, if you have a coffee shop, if you bake bread, if you make cakes, if you're a brewery, if you make oils, whatever it is, and you're proud of the product that you make, you can put it forward. And we're now down to the sort of serious judging. And me and my fellow panelists, we've been going around the country and tasting. I was in Birmingham last week, meeting an amazing lady who makes cakes, and I think it's called Buckingham's Palace Cakes, and she has a little business that she started quite a few years ago, and she just makes, you know, she was making cakes for friends, and now she sort of caters weddings, and she produces incredibly refined looking beautiful things, as well as a rather splodgy looking chocolate cake. So we basically tasted that, then I'm off to Northern Ireland tomorrow to meet the makers of an amazing rapeseed oil. And so me and my judges, we're going around the country and we're tasting the best of the artisanal entries, and it's pretty impressive. And then you know, people will be able to stay in a Hotel Indigo in that area where if there's a winner, and maybe taste the cake, taste the oils, and so on. So it's really bringing some little known, lesser known artisanal producers to the fore. And, you know, I mean, I think it's really important, actually, apart from this being a fabulous PR wheeze, actually the idea of allowing very small producers to get a little bit of national profile, I think it's very important, because that's where food culture begins. It's with small producers who're not doing it for money, and initially they do it for passion. And so that's why people like me and the Marmite woman are happy to be involved.
Elizabeth, does this float your boat?
It actually does. It sounds like a cool job. I want to do that. Just travel and eat.
She's back to graduate in a few weeks' time. And finally managed William to actually, on her first show, identify the job that Elizabeth Obeng wants to do. Success. Jessica.
How exactly did you get to where you are today? How did you start off?
Ooh, that's a nice
well,
question.
Well, Alex,
he's got 30 Alex, seconds.
I know, I'm sorry. I realised.
From day one.
Your presenter rang up and said, will you come and have a chat with me? That's where I got to where I got. It was just all Alex's latitude.
Well, there you are. Okay. You see, sorted in every sense of the word.
But if you wanted the longer version in terms of how I'm a food writer and how I end up critiquing food on telly, I'm basically a journalist who ended up on a food magazine. Mm. And so I've been in journalism for years. Was recruited as deputy editor of a magazine then called Waitrose Food Illustrated, now renamed Waitrose Kitchen, and through doing that realized that I could kind of achieve journalistic satisfaction through writing about food. I found that food was a wonderful subject for a journalist because it's about everything: culture, politics, history, economics. It's a doorway into people's lives. So I kind of cracked on, kept on at that job, got the editorship, which was a sort of pretty important moment in my life personally, and then over the years got asked to do bits of telly, and you know, one thing leads to another. So I was, you know, I suppose I did a bit of MasterChef, and now I'm one of the permanent judges. I say that, they'll probably sack me, you know.
No.
Rather like Jack Straw. It's like Jack Straw saying I'm going to go to the House of Lords.
William, I have heard it on the grapevine that there's a certain sort of opening for Top Gear that they might be looking for your input.
That's the only way.
Do you know what? Okay, if he hit the guy, right, no excuse. But when you've been filming for 10 hours, and you know, really good TV producers, directors understand that they've got to keep
look
the crew
after the
fed.
Talent. Got to look after the talent. You've
got to keep the talent happy, sure, but you've got to keep the crew fed. And one of the best directors I've ever worked with, who made a film with me, it's called Michael Waldman, and he made a film about that film I did about Michelin. And he spent most of the time, when we weren't delving for stories, making sure that we knew where we were going to have breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And I always thought he was almost sort of overdoing it with his instructions to the AP and the research to make sure that we were fed. But it is so important. You cannot march on an empty stomach. However glamorous people might think the job of hosting TV shows, and they think that Clarkson and May and Hammond just sort of chat about being middle-aged and their love of cars, and actually it's not about cars, it's just about being comfortable with who you are. It's still hard work, and when you have a long day and you finish, I can understand if you want to have a hot meal, not just be offered a cheese platter. Now, whether you then put on your hobnail boots and give the AP a kick or a smack in the face, obviously I would try not to go that far. No one's confirmed that there was physical violence, and if so, that's stupid and that's wrong. But in his defence, you've got in that great film Groundhog Day, you know, keep the talent happy.
Precisely.
And in fact, you've got to keep the crew fed. You've got to keep these guys fed.
I had to do two pieces for BBC Humberside on that very sort of issue yesterday. It's just phenomenal. Just obviously, it's rolled out into a whole new news aspect. Anyway, Emma, last two questions for William Sitwell, please.
Of course. William, have you enjoyed your time on the show today?
Emma, just hearing your beautiful silky voice.
What about mine?
You know, that makes me so happy. No, it's all about me.
Okay.
It's all about me.
But you do have a really good radio voice.
Yeah, you do. Jealous.
Thanks, guys. Anyway, moving on. Will you be joining us on the show anytime soon, William?
You tell me. But I'm always happy for our Thursday morning to have a bit of silky voice-driven sunshine. So,
oh, fantastic. You can definitely come again.
The Indians send signals from the rocks above the pass. The cowboys take position in the bushes and the grass. The score is with the corporal, she is tidy. I kiss her for the first time and then I take her home. I'm invited in for coffee and I give the dog a bone. She likes to go to discos but she's never on her own. I said I'll see you later and I'll give her some old chat. But it's not like they on the TV. When it's cool for cats, it's cool for cats.
Lived in including the ones who reside upstairs at Downton Tabby. The litterbox filled abode at the centre of Chris Kelly's wonderful book, which tells the story, of course, of England's first family of cats. Originally, I thought this was a spoof, Chris, but no, it's real, and we are delighted to be able to welcome from the wonderful world of California and Los Angeles the author, the creator of Downton Tabby. I'll say again, Downton Tabby. That is the legend that is Chris Kelly. Chris, how are you?
I'm great, thanks.
So, was it simply a case of you were watching PBS one evening and you thought, oh, Downton Abbey, that's very good. What about the felines in residence there? How did you come up with this great idea of you know, England's first family of cats?
Well, I was a fan of the show, and one morning I was my animals were waking me up, and I realized that my relationship with them was like the servants at Downton Abbey's relationship with the people upstairs. That I existed to serve this cat, dog, and at the time a guinea pig and a lizard that we had in the house.
Well, I mean, that makes perfect sense in every sense of the word. I mean, it's a bit of feline-themed series of events we've been running on the Midweek Drive, because clearly Prezibox.com is one of the sort of key areas, as Zach Edwards would say, that's really keen to obviously promote this whole thing. But it has become, like the series itself, a working phenomenon, the Downton Tabby setup, really. I mean, did you ever in your wildest dreams think, yeah, obviously the cats are taking over the planet?
Well, they certainly run my corner of the planet. And it's been terrific with the book, because it's been such a success in here and in England and in Australia, which surprised and pleased me.
Precisely. It's the little golden nuggets of wisdom that also impressed me. If you absolutely must go outside, kill birds, being one of them. Never do anything for yourself that someone else can do for you. Another classic from that point of view. And clearly the perfect stocking stuffer. Just amazing. And it's brought me neatly round to another Californian songstress that we've been working with for a good few years, actually, now. And she's called Amy Rasch. Now, have you ever encountered Amy Rasch in any way, shape, or form, Chris?
No, the name is so familiar. What type of music is it?
It's our own unique, wonderful music, because she's literally just done a special fundraiser, which we're going to ask her whether this taps into the Downton Tabby sequence. But I'd like you to cast your critical ear over this. And it's Amy Rasch's tribute to cats and kittens in all sorts of ways. Are you ready to have a quick listen to Amy Rasch with Kitty Decides?
Sure.
Get the general flavour of this whole little number there, that Kitty Decides. Yeah, a superb video. It's available on YouTube. It will be released shortly, and it's actually designed to actually benefit animal rescue as well. I'm just thinking, when we move to the next sort of stage of things with Downton Tabby, perhaps as we move through that, this could possibly be the soundtrack. What do you think, Kitty Decides?
Of course, if it makes a time jump into the modern day.
This is the whole thing, because we know it's set in the exciting world of the early part of the 20th century, the 1920s. But if we actually moved updates to the whole thing, we'd actually pass through the whole notion, and Lady Minxie and Mathmew Clowder, and the oh so forbidden love between Lady Serval and the family's chauffeur would actually be there. Then Kitty Decides could be a thing. It's our little bit here to actually connect little creative geniuses, Chris. So I just a bullet out of there. But obviously, I know you're going to say you're going to have to run it past your cats first for final approval. On a slightly different note from that perspective, I mean, the thing about cats is obviously we just appreciate them in all sorts of ways. I mean, the Egyptians sort of held them in awe and wonder and all sorts of other areas. Have you always been a cat man?
Yeah, ever since I was a kid, and we had too many of them growing up. But it was I don't know. And well, you know, dogs as well. But for some, I think it does sort itself out, and you realize one day that you know you are a cat person and not a dog person.
Well, of course, that was my next question, Chris, because obviously some people would say you can't be both. You know, dogs or cats. And so I personally, I've had cats and dogs, and I've got on well with both of them in many ways, really, from that line. But you would actually argue that no, it's cats or canines. You can't go for both.
Yeah, and I think it's about the relationship of whether, you know, a dog who wants to please you, whereas a cat is entirely on its own.
I suppose they are independent, aren't they? I mean, in terms of the way in which Hollywood has obviously dealt with cats, we've obviously the Aristocat springs to mind. We've got the harsh treatment that Disney meted out in, I think, the Lady and the Tramp with respect to the Siamese cats and so on. Do you feel that cats have had a rough deal? Is this part of the Downton Abbey sequence to actually, you know, bring a new form of cats and cat appreciation into the 21st century?
Well, you know what? What's interesting about working with animals in TV, which you know, is that the prejudice might come out of simple production problems. It's so much easier to work with a dog than a cat.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing, because if you are a wrangler, to use the sort of terms on a film set and so on, you know, we know from the point of view, I mean, cats can be so good. You look at all the YouTube videos with respect to cats and boxers and so on, and you know when they want to perform, they can do it, but sometimes they just say, no, I can't be bothered, you know, what's it worth?
Well, there's some, you know the James Bond movie, You Only Live Twice?
Oh, yes, well, Blofeld and his white pussycat, what were we going to do with that, exactly?
Well, there's a scene from it where, I mean, the sound has been taken out, but where poor Donald Pleasance is trying to deal with this cat, and there's an explosion on the set, and this cat is the least happy cat in the history of film.
And it's not going to help if Donald Pleasance at the time actually had tuna fish in his cleavage, because that's not going to work. It's going to be a limited success, let's face it. You know that you could actually sort of put some tuna fish in your cleavage and suddenly a cat will... Yeah, it's not going to work in every case, because they'll suss it out. They're not idiots, these cats. It's a different line entirely.
And you can't, yes, and you can't prepare them for the special effects that are coming up.
Well,
they're not concentrating.
They are their own special effects. So, will Downton Abbey continue to grow? Will it continue? Or have you got already plans afoot to actually have more amusing tales told in your own inimitable way?
Well, you know, I was recapping the show for the Huffington Post here for as a continuation of the book, and I wanted to do that with the next season, which I was going to binge watch and then move on from there.
Because, I mean, you know, other shows like The Wire, you can't see it sort of being fitted out in terms of cat systems from that point of view. if we went to Just Call Saul, or if we went to other the sort of series, The Fringe, I don't know, Fringe might have possibilities. And clearly Star Trek The Final Frontier is just waiting to actually sort of go down the cat routine. They already in the cartoon series had Lieutenant Moress, who was a feline of feline extraction. So there are always... I mean, is there a series which you think, yeah, actually, if it wasn't Downton Abbey, this is the one I might go for?
Wow, I'm trying to think now.
I'm thinking Friends, perhaps?
Yes, I think Friends Friends just because they spent so much time sitting around.
Exactly. That's my thought. You know, you could see who would be taking on the Jennifer Aniston role almost immediately. In a white Persian.
any Real Housewife show where they spend so much time having people bring them things.
Yeah. So Desperate Housewives, Desperate Tabbies. Could be a different line there. There are ways forward, but then, you know, obviously we've got some of the musical lined up as well. Chris, it's been phenomenal touching base with yourself. A reminder, if people want to get hold of a copy of Downton Abbey, they can go, of course, in the UK to Amazon, or indeed in the US to Amazon, or indeed prezibox.com. Any particular other contacts? I mean, can we look forward to more websites? Will there be more Downton Tabby? I mean, I can see a considerable fan base growing here for the Downton Tabbies.
Oh, you know, I would return to it any time, and I have whenever something cat-like or Downton Abbey amuses me. I was just saw Rose Leslie in something, and I thought, oh yeah, I could cat that up.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, again, classic line: is this just part of the Californian way? I mean, if you tried this in New York, people would probably laugh and they'd say, "What's going on here?" Is it that laid-back Californian attitude? I mean, we've got Phil Leonis, ace film director. He's always on about Fuzz Aldrin, his own sort of adopted Egyptian cat that's in there, sort of making production decisions, has his own website. Is it a California thing?
You know, I think it is.
You see, that's it. California cats, New York dogs. And that's the reason there's the East Coast Challenge. Might have just touched base on that one there. Chris, it's been fabulous. Do you have a website yourself you'd like to promote and just sort of mention at this stage?
No, I do most of my work through the Huffington Post.
Well, there you see, and the Huffington Post is a far better online service because of that. It adds a certain quality to the whole thing, Chris. That's the bottom line. Two final questions for your good self at this stage, though. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting and perfectly wonderful kitty cat moment here on the Madrid Drive Morning Edition? Has it been okay for yourself?
Oh, yeah, it's been terrific. Thank you.
So can we look forward to hopefully featuring you again in the very near future and finding out more about the ongoing saga of Downton Tabby and the cats involved?
Sure, anytime.
And tempting that might well be to have Amy Rush, and Kitty decides, we think, no, we'll just let, no, just, it's enough, because obviously, otherwise Elizabeth Obeng will be running screaming
around
the studio. Put in Sam Stone, put him in now, that's the important thing. After this, we'll of course be featuring Cynthia Martin, who'll be talking about pilot season in Los Angeles. But Elizabeth, have you enjoyed your show?
Yeah, I really like it, it's really nice and fun, even though it's in the morning, but
even
yeah.
Though it's in the morning.
I know, it is a struggle, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
All great art needs that whole system. So will you be returning to catch up with us in the near future then? Will you be seeing some
of, I think so, yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Midweek Drive for the Wednesday show. It's 5:07.
Well, actually, that's in the evening, so she'll be fine.
Because you can speak to Los Angeles people directly as opposed to listen to pre-recorded,
which is going
to
be so cool.
Emma, always good to have you back for the second hour. You're back for that volume, so good stuff from that perspective.
Happy.
And you'll be obviously back on Wednesday.
Fantastic.
Good.
Can't wait.
And Jessica, it's netball next week.
Netball, indeed.
Your
be
final,
here
and it's
Thursday.
A crucial match because it's Nottingham Trent.
Yes.
So you have to win.
Nottingham Trent was this week, actually. But we've moved the game.
What was the score?
I don't know. I haven't found out.
You weren't in the team?
No, because I was here. I was on the show instead.
You weren't dropped, were you?
No.
Oh, okay.
They found out she was on the radio and they were like, no, we're not having you.
I just don't know what could happen with respect to that. Completely bizarre system. Okay, so you'll be back next week. That's great. As I say, we're wrapping up now, but it's Elizabeth's first show, so you get a choice of music. So why have you actually gone for your next piece of music by Sam Smith?
Yeah.
Just yeah.
Oh, sorry, Sam Smith. What's the name of the song again?
Not the only one.
Sorry, guys.
Good.
Yeah.
It's a good tune.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Obeng's mother is in Ghana. She might be trying to get further away, but she can still listen to us online.
I'm not that bad.
Yeah, exactly. Very good.
You and me, we made a vow. For better or for worse, I can't believe I know I'm not the only one. And I know, 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 and I don't know. I know I'm not the only one.
Now, when you've actually got the delights of Alien Dawn, Alien Armageddon, and First Time Long Time to your credit, and you're looking after the Artists Unlimited Talent Agency, you might think, that is enough, clearly. There's no, a Renaissance woman obviously is beckoning, because we're delighted to be able to welcome, for the first time on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition, another superb LA connection, right in the height, of course, of pilot season. It's ace talent agent, superb actress, and general all-round wonderful producer. That'll be Cynthia Martin. Cynthia, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Happy to be here. Thank you so much.
Excellent. Now, I mean, as I said, multi-talented. Normally, you find it's folk towards the kind of the end of their career who start going into production and agencies and all sorts of other bits and pieces. But you managed to combine all three effectively. So what's the secret, Cindy?
Well, you know, I'm reminded of Mary Pickford and Charlie Chaplin back in the day of silent movies, and they were the actors, and they decided to start their own company to produce their own films, and that was United Artists. And when Charlie Chaplin signed the papers, he said, "Now the inmates are running the asylum," and that's kind of the motto we go by. I know it's crazy where the inmates are running the asylum, and it just gives us a little bit more control over what we're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, the difference between yourself and Mary Pickford, apart from the fact that you're much more talented than Mary, I'm sure, if she's looking down, she'd say, yeah, Cindy Crawford is the girl that basically has taken the mantle on, is clearly we have much more multimedia. I mean, the very fact we're doing this interview live over the Atlantic Ocean, and indeed the Pacific, depending on which way around the world you're going, of course, is just tantamount to the fact that with online material, with social networking, social media, it's an ongoing sequence in which really there are all sorts of other areas, and the way in which people are consuming movies, for instance, and TV series is changing.
Absolutely, and it's also changing as far as running the agency. So much of what I do to get auditions for the actors in the agency and for myself is all digital. And so I'm on my deck out in Malibu with my laptop at 5 in the morning, and that's my office. I'm submitting people digitally for the auditions. It's all digital now.
So that's why we love our California links, because you can say they're out in Malibu sorting things through on that basis, and it's just a matter of, in Lincoln, it's a fairly bright spring day at present, but you know who knows. But then again, Lincoln and Los Angeles, it's an interesting juxtaposition at the best of times. So great stuff there. Cindy, just talk to us in terms of what appealed initially to yourself in terms of entering the business of show in the first place.
Well, you know, that started back when I was in college, and I was actually torn between being a dance major or going to law school. So I was majoring in political science and taking a lot of dance classes, and I was living out on the beach in Santa Cruz, California. That's a little bit north of L.A. And I got my start actually as a swimsuit model with Ocean Sports magazine. And then from there, that led to music videos, to commercials, and then movies, but I also ended up going to law school. And about the time I was graduating from law school, a couple of actors I knew way back when, way before Artists Unlimited Agency, we decided to start a production company, Renegade Film Artists. And we were all actors, but I did the legal work. Another actor was a writer. Another actor was a cinematographer. And we started creating our own projects. And so that kind of led in that direction. And then from there, I got more into the acting, and that company kind of dissipated. And then, about 5 years ago, I was up in the Santa Cruz area still, and I was coming back to L.A., and I thought, you know, I need to find a good L.A. agent. And then I thought, you know, with my lawyer background, my production background, I'll start an agency.
Infinitely
and
better.
And so that kind of... That led to the formation of the agency, and then my business partner is also an actor with the agency. And then when people get auditions for bigger parts, the other actors work with them, and we just are, you know, ship of fool. We're all in this together.
I can see the whole notion of William Morris beginning to realise that, yes, actually, Cynthia Martin will be the name of the 21st century. And just as people used to say in the 20th century, I well recall from the Spotlight Casting Directory on the UK side of the routine, if you weren't with William Morris, you weren't in the business. Well, that was nonsense then. But I'm sure the same thing will be said with respect to Cynthia Martin. If you're not with Cynthia Martin, I don't know, your career could be on the skids. Neil Johnson, of course, will be joining us in a few weeks' time. Another key director, producer, writer. writer. But let's talk a little bit about the pilot season, because one of our other regular correspondents, Kelly Duncan Joyner, who worked with the Tom Chasen Associates agency for a time and has now sort of stepped aside into her own sort of agency field as well, you often used to say that the kind of key period for pilot season used to be, back in around about the sort of September, the sort of the fall period, September, October, that sort of time. It would seem these days you've actually got two, because obviously with mid-season breaks and inserts from that point of view, is it true that actually you're getting more than one pilot season per year?
There's a little bit in the fall, but I would say the heaviest pilot season starts about mid-January and is still going, it's just starting to wind down. This is definitely the biggest pilot season of the year. But you do find a little bit in the fall, but definitely January, February, March is still the biggest push, and it's the craziest time.
Well, that makes perfect sense. Can't let you go without talking about Alien Dawn and Alien Armageddon, because clearly that's very much in the science fiction fantasy field, which again can open up a whole range of things from that perspective. Is that a genre that you particularly sort of are fond of? Is it something which you think, it's a job? I do the business from that point of view, just as in the same way as I was in Power Rangers in Space, the TV series. Classic, 1996.
You've done your homework, haven't you?
we just wanted to clarify, you are not the Cindy Martin who used to also work for Marvel Comics and actually draw the adventures of Star Wars and Luke Skywalker. That's a different Cindy Martin, because we did have one query. So
that is a different Cindy Martin, okay. Although I am often confused for her.
Well,
the sci-fi genre,
yeah.
Is just so much fun, especially in this digital age, because there's so much you can do with special effects. And Artists Unlimited, we do a lot of work with director Neil Johnson, who directed and wrote Alien Dawn, Alien Armageddon, and he's won quite a few awards on his newest, Starship. And that's always going to be a niche with our agency. Of course, we do pilots, we do feature films, but the sci-fi is a lot of fun, and we do a lot of joint productions with Neil Johnson in that respect.
And it makes perfect
sense. Alien Dawn, actually, that entire film, all the major roles were actors with Artists Unlimited.
And that,
Rochelle DiMario, Mike Arbuscato, Alex Bell, Tiffany Adams, Tiffany Martin, and yours truly. So, yeah, that will always be a big part of Artists Unlimited.
Do you know, I can sense, I mean, you know, we had Orson Welles used to run the Mercury Theatre Company. I can see that Artists Unlimited, with your good self at the head of the ship, could be, you know, the 21st century equivalent to the Orson Welles Mercury Theatre Company. Have you considered doing radio plays as well?
No, but it's definitely in this digital age an area worth looking into, and that's something that Neil Johnson and I should talk about.
Well,
and you know what else we're doing over here, though? We're also venturing into action feature films. And right now, one of our actors, Philip Marshall Tyler, is starring opposite Bruce Willis and Sir Ben Kingsley in Wake. And they're calling this Bruce Willis's last action film.
No.
And
surely not. I mean,
that's what they're saying. I hope not,
yeah,
but that's
exactly
what they're saying. And then our Philip Marshall Tyler, he and Ben Kingsley are the villains in that project, and that's going to be another direction for the agency. We're going to be going more into the action feature film. Yeah.
And it is quite interesting, because obviously Ben Kingsley, British actor, for a long time you've got a notion, well, if you've got a received pronunciation British accent, you've obviously got to be the villain, because that makes perfect sense. You are the villain. Never mind.
Absolutely.
It's a different line, but yes, I think that one of the beauties, and obviously we're doing a radio interview at present in many ways, as well as podcasts and so on and so forth, but I often find that one of the great things about radio in its format, as well as being the theatre of the mind, is of course you can actually listen to radio plays and radio sort of features as you're driving along, whereas if you actually had a DVD playing whilst you're driving a car, fatal, could be a disaster, you know, carnage on your hands, it's not going to work at all. So it's another way of actually consuming the goodness of the media in every sense.
And you know, there's so much retro, at least here in the States, coming back. Record players, landlines, and you know, I think radio would be another one to bring back, because there's so much you can do. There's so much you can do with the production, but then also with the imagination. I think I love it. I think that's definitely an avenue worth worth looking into.
Well, you see, there we are, Cindy, and you can always sort of link up with us at the University of Lincoln as well for academic credibility as well. Outrageous. You mentioned clearly the fine soul, that's Neil Johnson. In fact, it was via Neil that initially we got in contact with your good self, because it's a bit of a tenuous link coming up here, but one of our regular correspondents every Wednesday, when he's not actually sort of attending various other post-production meetings and such like, we have Phil Leonis, director of The Truth Is Out There, and recently The Lady Killers, that's up there, and he hosts a show with Dean Haglund, formerly of The X-Files, called Chilpack Hollywood and Chilpack Hollywood Hour from downtown Los Angeles. And bear with me, it's coming out now. They had as one of their guests recently the fabulous Tori Higginson, of course, known for Stargate, Atlantis, etc. And I believe Tori was one of the fine team that Neil was working with in a new project that they're looking to get off the ground and all sorts of other bits and pieces. So I think that was the interesting connection, which just goes to show it's always worthwhile keeping those network channels open, really.
Absolutely, absolutely, especially in this industry. It's all building bridges and networking and everyone bringing each other up, and absolutely, I couldn't agree more.
So, Cindy, I know we're doing this as a pre-record because of the excitement of the time machine and the pilot season and all of those other factors, but have you ever been over to the United Kingdom? Have you been to Britain as yet? Have you sort of been to Lincoln, London, or any of the other sort of key sites on the other side of the Atlantic?
Absolutely, I have. I when I was in law school, I spent a summer studying at Cambridge University, and I actually have a second cousin. He's now deceased. He was a professor over at Oxford, and I visited him quite a few times. I actually did quite a bit of studying in Europe. I studied at Cambridge. I also studied in the Netherlands, and
as I said at the start,
I love,
Cindy, this is why we defined you as a Renaissance woman. You know, clearly you've got that whole sort of package writ large on that basis. And obviously this is moving on to the next stage, which is we need to set up the campaign either with our colleagues at Sci-Fi London and Louis Savvy, of course, with a fine country film festival that's now, I think, approaching its 14th year as far as sci-fi movies and things are concerned. But we need the campaign to actually bring you back to the UK, Cindy. We need more Cindy Martin in person in the United Kingdom. That's what we'll be looking for.
Absolutely, and I'm on board. I love the UK. It's one of my favorite places. I love the UK. I love the history, the historic architecture, the people. It's a wonderful place and very talented. Very, very talented.
Well, we do our bit. I mean, obviously, Eddie Redmayne did quite well at the recent Academy Awards, so that was okay from that point of view. We've had a few other actors who've done a few bits and pieces. In fact, you mentioned Charlie Chaplin here. Of course, he was born here to start off with, so, you know, we've got the United Artists baggage.
Absolutely.
So it all works well.
Yeah, it's definitely an international field we're in these days, and yeah, I love the UK. And you know what? You were mentioning Neil Johnson.
Indeed.
You know, Neil Johnson was born in the UK.
Exactly.
He grew up in Australia, but he was born in the UK.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the
and now here he is in LA. And actually, he goes back there, I believe, not Starship, but right before Starship, he produced and filmed a movie over there. I'm sorry, the name slips me at the moment. But well, yeah, he keeps his ties there too.
Well, literally seconds before we did this link, we had email correspondence, and we have confirmed that all being well, assuming the planets are aligned and everything else is sorted, Neil will be joining us live on the show for April 1st. That's Wednesday, April 1st, 2015, all being well. So in many ways, Cindy, you're doing what all top agents do. You're kind of being a pioneer, and then you can turn around and say, it's not that bad, Neil. It's okay. You know, they're not that sort of harsh in the whole solar system. We've got two final questions to put to you at present. I mean, we could go on with lots of stuff I really want to sort of focus on in terms of just some of the work that you've done and continued work from that point of view, but time is as ever of the essence, and we need to ask you those two final questions. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition today, Cindy Martin?
Absolutely, 100%.
Well, this is good. It's kind of customer feedback, Cindy. That's what we're looking for here. So the next critical question is, can we look forward to hopefully featuring you again in the not-too-distant future, and possibly when pilot season has wound down, etc. And obviously, you can celebrate the joys of your artists and all sorts of other things. Will you return, Cindy?
I absolutely will return. It would be an honor and a privilege.
Well, that's what you call going right up to the wire. Thanks to Elizabeth Obeng and Emma Tinson and Jessica Ward. Get well soon, Jared. Next week, it's the Midweek Drive Morning Edition Country Special with Country Links, Jane Southall and a whole heap of other goodies. Have you enjoyed the show, Jessica?
Of course, always, Alex.
And Emma?
Of course.
And Elizabeth?
Yes.
Yes.
If you're a listener, just keep enjoying Siren FM. Coming up next, we have Fabulous Media Madness. That's it. Can we all say bye-bye?
Bye. Bye.
The latest news and sport on Siren 107.3 FM. In the East Midlands, this is Siren FM.